Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Continuing discussion of Guru Tattva, Guru issues. The word Guru is a well-known word in Tamil. Do you say Guru? Still, they didn't find out a Tamil word for that. Original Sanskrit word. Now, it's well known in India and it's well known in the Western world also. Recently, someone showed me the most popular download or something. Most popular something from the internet in America is by an Indian guru. Gaur Gopal. There's a whole bunch of letters, and then what is the first word you find in it? And then it shows what your character is. And he said, I found in it compassion. We have Sadhguru. And yesterday I was informed that Sai Baba is reincarnated and is doing huge. I didn't even know, Madhusudan Sai. So they are all different kinds of gurus. What does guru mean actually? Even in our own ISKCON, how do we perceive gurus? We're all disciples. What is the first qualification of a guru? I just gave a clue there. First thing is he should be a disciple. And he's always a disciple. Not that now I'm a guru, so now I'm not a disciple. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of his songs, he sings, Amito Vaishnav e Buddhi Hoile Amani Nahobo Ami. Pratishta asha ashaya hridoy dushibe hoibo nirayagami. He says that if I think that I am a Vaishnav, then my consciousness will be polluted and I will go to hell. So he finishes the song by saying, Tai shishatava takibo sharvada naloibo pujaka. He finishes the song by saying that, therefore I will always remain a disciple, and I'll not accept worship from anyone. Of course, he also initiated. One of his, maybe his first disciple, or one of his first disciples was Jagadish Bhakti Pradeep, Jagadish Bosu, who simply, as a young man, he read some of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings. He was from Borishal district of East Bengal and came to Mayapur to take initiation from him. He knew just by his writing, I have to find this person. And he wasn't well known at that time, Bhaktivinoda. In this, he only had a few disciples. And he took a lot of guidance from the very beginning from Saraswati Thakur. And later he became the first sannyas initiate of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also gave initiation, which was quite a step in the Vaishnav world at the time, considering that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was from a non-Brahmana caste, although all kinds of things had been going on in the in and around the Vaishnava world at that time. There were the Kartha Bhajas, who Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself had been closely associated with at one point in time, who were little bit Vaishnava. They're included in the 13 upper sampradayas, and their gurus are from very low class background, low caste, I should say. But low caste in those days almost always meant low class also. Although it's all very complicated, because the kayastas, of which Bhaktivinoda Thakur was one, they're counted as shudras, and they're not afraid to say that, but they're also high class. So they're intelligent, educated, and actually they were taking over the position of the brahmanas in Bengal in the prestige in the society at that time, because the brahmanas were sticking to their old traditional education, the kayastas were taking the English education and going up in society. Now you find all the big Bengalis, most of them at the time. There's Vivekananda was from the same family as Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Same family. You know, in India, families are very big. So Hatkola Datas, and there was Aurobindo Ghosh, Abhay Charan Day. There are so many others. They're just not coming to my mind. Anyway, there are many. They're very prominent. So it was quite a step for him to give initiation, but even though he seemingly decried the attitude of being a guru, he took the position of being a guru. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur addressed that also in one of his famous lectures, in which he said that, look, you're all looking up at me. I'm sitting on a big high seat, and who is that? Like some animal at the zoo, you're all staring at him. How can I be a guru? What is this nonsense? I'm being a guru. But he said, on the other hand, my guru has ordered me. And then he quoted, Jare Deko Tare Koha Krishna Upadesh Amar Agyai Guru Hoyatara Edesh. The order comes down in disciplic succession to be a guru and save this land. And he said, if I didn't do it, then the parampara would come to an end. Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, he also said that so many people were asking him to give initiation, he wouldn't give initiation. His godbrothers are telling him he should give initiation. He thought, no, I can't do it. I'm not qualified for that. But then at some point, it came to his mind that I'm not qualified. And he said, super qualified, but he thought, I'm not qualified for that. But then he thought that, well, in an epidemic situation where there's so many people need treatment and there's a shortage of doctors, then even a junior nurse who knows the basic procedures can take the role of a doctor out of necessity. And he also thought that, he related this, he also thought that I received so many gifts from my Guru Dev, and why should I be a miser? I should distribute that to others also. So he took up that service of initiating. Generally, devotees I see within ISKCON, they see their guru, they identify in what we can call an emotional way. I'm not saying that as a bad thing, but I'm just, often they look up to their guru as a father, and especially I see that was very prominent among the female disciples of Srila Prabhupada. They looked, and in our ISKCON today we have so many gurus as uncles also. Some of the earlier devotees especially looked sideways to Prabhupada as a friend. Mukunda Maharajan, you'll find in that introduction or the preface to Science of Self-Realization, he says, Prabhupada, I saw him as my great friend, even though there was such a great difference in years. Srila Prabhupada was young in age in somewhat is exciting and adventurous, and that really, that was one of the appeals to the hippies. Some may take the guru as a family counselor, and so many things in the family and you have to counsel them. Some may think that the guru should be a pen pal or a psychologist. People expect love from their guru, emotional support. But the key role of a guru, the definitive role, is to be a bestower of knowledge. He teaches. But it's not exactly the same as being a teacher. It's more than the English word teacher and the Sanskrit word guru, they have very different connotations. Because a teacher, he's paid to teach. It's a job for him. And he may also care for the students. A good teacher is one who cares for the students, actually wants them to come up and succeed. But there's, in the dharmic tradition, I didn't say the Vedic tradition, I said the dharmic tradition, because beyond the Vedic understanding, the dharmic tradition, using the word dharma broadly, that extends to Jainism and Buddhism and Sikhism, in which they all have gurus, and even to Tantrism, which is decidedly anti-Vedic. But they all have the concept of a guru who you submit yourself to be trained and molded. So it's more than being a teacher. It's a whole package. You could have a guru. Well, the guru's not just in spirit. Generally, it's understood, or especially understood, that a guru is a spiritual teacher. But then also to teach music, to teach Sanskrit, to teach dancing. They're also teachers. They're also gurus. One submits to them as a disciple. So we can expect, even if someone is teaching how to dance, how to play the veena, all this kind of thing, Sanskrit, we'll expect that there'll be some affection between the guru and the disciple. But I was saying that within our ISKCON devotees, they tend to see the guru as a father or a friend. That's how they immediately think. Spiritual master, yes, but they think in terms of some emotional bond. But the definitive feature is as a giver of knowledge. The teacher how to play veena may be very affectionate to the disciple, very loving, but his efficacy as a guru will be seen in how much the disciple learns how to play the veena, not in how much the disciple likes him. So he may be very nice. Really, really, really nice guru, but not a very good teacher. So that the function of a guru is not fulfilled. Now, of course, in bhakti, what is being taught? It's actually different to teaching how to play the veena, how to learn Sanskrit, or any skill or technique, because what's being taught is one's constitutional position. It's really uncovering it. It's bringing it out. And what is that? What is that constitutional position? That constitutional position is a position of love of Krishna. So it is love. In bhakti, love is the basic principle. Giving knowledge, of our loving relationship with Krishna. But again, it should be emphasized that the giving knowledge part is the basic role of the guru. It's not just being a nice guy and smiling at people and patting them on the head and all this kind of thing. But it is, there's a transmission of knowledge. And also the transmission of knowledge in the spiritual relationship, it is different from that of, say, the Sanskrit teacher or the dancing teacher or the music teacher, because those skills do not relate to the eternal position of the teacher or the taught. It may be that in the spiritual world, the guru and the disciple will play vina. It may or may not be, but it's not an essential characteristic of the soul. Another thing is that the knowledge that is imparted, the spiritual knowledge that is imparted, that uncovers one's natural position, that the teaching of Shastra, which is imparted, oh, that's another important thing, in the Dharmic tradition, or in the Vedic tradition, what is taught. Yeah, there are so many parallels. The Vina teacher teaches what he learned from his guru. There's a parampara. And I suppose if you trace it back far enough, it shall go back to Vina Pani, Sarasvati. And like this, all the Vedic arts, they go back ultimately to Krishna. There's a parampara. But the spiritual knowledge which is imparted, that we learn theoretically. I am not this body. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. We engage in activities which engage us on the spiritual platform, making garlands for Krishna, cooking for Krishna, serving Krishna's devotees, and that places us in spiritual life, at least in the rudimentary level. And then the effect of receiving this knowledge is that the covering of ignorance dissipates, and then our true knowledge, which is realized knowledge that arises within the heart, Divya Gyan Hriday Prakashito, we sing to Srila Prabhupada, that he reveals spiritual knowledge. It's by speaking and then by engaging us in devotional service, the spiritual knowledge is revealed. And that spiritual knowledge is us, is swata pramanya, to use technical term. It's, or in the words of the Gita, pratyakshavagamam dharmyam, it is directly realized. Just like to give a mundane example, when we're feeling cold, now the cold season is coming, as much as there is a cold season in the lowland of Tamil Nadu. So the cold season is coming, and we feel cold. We don't need to go to a science class to understand that we're cold. It's directly experienced. So this knowledge of Krishna consciousness, which we receive, it and practically engaging in Krishna consciousness, then that dissipates the ignorance of considering I am this body, I am cold. And it reveals, when we say self-realization, it might not be like a light bulb going off, which is on the cover of the Science of Self-Realization, the new cover. It might not be like a light bulb lighting up, but we just experience. And then, of course, it wouldn't be we just experience. It would be it's a tremendous realization that I am the servant of Krishna. So other gurus, the first guru is the mother, described as the first guru in She teaches also, teaches, or her teaching is also bringing out innate abilities. She helps how to walk. She helps to learn how to eat, very basic things. So she's also a guru. And then she may, and other things she'll teach also, which are not innate, cultural things like, among others, she'll teach how to behave in human society. And that will be different in different cultures and maybe in different families also. So the mother, she teaches and she gives love. Both things are there. But mostly we think of the mother, not so, although the Shastra says that the first guru is the mother, generally we think of the mother in terms of love, not so much as a teacher. Maybe it's just taken for granted. It's not even noticed because it's just taken for granted. She's also a teacher. But the spiritual guru means a giver of knowledge, jnana data, jnana pradata. Of course, this is very much emphasized in the jnana marg, in those schools that promote that by knowledge alone we will be liberated. Those who think that, as stated in Shastra, Brahmavid Brahmaiva Bhavati. By knowing Brahma, one becomes Brahma, which is, of course, misinterpreted by the Mayavadi school. Although in Bhakti school, that's understood to know Brahma means to know. Who am I and who is Param Brahma? And Brahmavid, it's not simply a matter of to be Brahmavit, to know Brahma, the spiritual. It's not simply a matter of learning something from a book. Well, even the Mayavadis, they know that you have to, not the modern imaginary Mayavadis who think they can do anything you like and just imagine, read a book or two and imagine yourself to be God. But traditionally the Mayavadis, they follow very strict principles, and you can't be a lecher and a meat eater and God realized, and you can't sing and dance in the streets according to the Mayavadis of Varanasi. Well, that's also true, unless you're singing Hare Krishna. But anyway, the jnana data, that is the role of a guru, that's what defines, that is the definition of a guru. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. We're in the darkness of non-knowledge, ignorance. And by applying the ointment of knowledge, it's an allegorical way of saying, actually metaphorical way of saying, the shalaka is an instrument for applying ointments on the eyes. So by applying that ointment of knowledge, the guru lets us see, gives us actual knowledge. So this metaphor is applicable in the sense of understanding that just if there is some covering on the eye, maybe a cataract is gathering in the eye, there's a covering of some cellular substance. I'm not sure exactly what. But by applying that ointment, then that coating, it gradually dissolves. And then one can see clearly again. So this is the example given, which is very suitable for the spiritual process of receiving knowledge from a guru. It that gradually, 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 one becomes able to see, actually. And then, Gyanena tutadagyanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham adityavajgyanam prakashyati tat param. If we're blind, then we can't even see the sun. Maybe blind people, they can tell the difference between being out in the midday sun and being in a dark room at night. Maybe. There may be different kinds of blindness, but some may be able to sense a light to some extent, just like Mataji. What's Shashi Rekha? What's her name? Kalyani, yeah. Oh. She can sense it, she can know when it's day and when it's night, so they may have some understanding like that. But the, so the example given in Bhagavad Gita that coming out of the, when one comes to knowledge, it's like coming into the sunlight out of the darkness. In the darkness, you may get an example given in the Bhagavatam is of glowworms. There was one just in the room next to me. I was up in your bird cage. You put me in your bird cage last night. And I saw a little light. It's just a tiny little light. Glowworm. You can see it, and it's not bright enough to see anything with. All you can see is it's there, that's all. And then if you have a torchlight, actually torch, the original torch in English means what in Sanskrit you say, mushal, which means it's pretty bright. You have a big it's a stick with some cloth wrapped around it, and then you'd put some oil, or in the modern age, petrol, as they say in India, or petrol in England, and then you light it, and it gives pretty good light, but still, it's very limited. But when the sun comes, you can see everything clearly, if your eyes are clear. Otherwise, the sun coming up doesn't make any difference to the blind man. Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world. Spiritually, everyone was blind. They couldn't recognize him. We can neither see Krishna, nor even we can see who is the great devotee. They couldn't see. They could see, oh. The first question that Howard Wheeler put to Srila Prabhupada when he saw him on the street the east side of New York City. Are you from India? Yes. Okay, well, there are also, at that time, about, 70 crores people from India. It's almost doubled by now, I think. So, all right, okay, he's from India. That distinguishes him from a large percentage of the rest of the human population of the world. But it doesn't really say anything about his spiritual status. That could be seen. He's from India. That could be understood. And he confirmed it. So that was the first knowledge he gave to Howard Wheeler. He's from India. Okay, something understood. But practically, Srila Prabhupada had to give prasadam and be nice to people and talk to people and engage them in chanting and start to speak to them. Some started to listen, and then they could begin to understand who he is. You can't even see the guru without knowledge. That's why I'm just thinking the last few days. There's a statement in the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada's purport, that a Kanishta Adhikari should be very cautious to accept only an Uttam Adhikari as a guru. How does he recognize? he has no knowledge by which to recognize. I'm just wondering about this. As I see, most of our devotees, in ISKCON today, and maybe especially the Indians, they approach someone for initiation on sentimental or emotional reasons or because they're pushed into it, but they don't really think about it very much, who they're approaching. So I'm giving this talk just to emphasize the point that guru means who gives knowledge. That is the basic understanding and definition of a guru. And it may or may not be that he has opened so many temples, has so many disciples, smiles nicely, is from a high lineage. Jai Krishna Tattva Veta, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, who knows the science of Krishna. That Srila Prabhupada translated it like that. And again and again and again we have Om Agyana Timirandasa. Tad Vigyanartam Sagurum Eva Abhigachet. To attain that spiritual knowledge, one must go to a guru. Always the definition of a guru is given in terms of knowledge. Oh, well, there is one statement in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Srila Prabhupada, to my knowledge, never quoted this, that Jaha Hoite Krishna Bhakti Shai Guru Hoi. Who we get bhakti from, that is the guru. And we also sing in Narottam Das's song every day that Prema Bhakti Jaha Hoite. From him we get Prema Bhakti. And what's the next line? Obidya Abhinasha Jati. Ignorance is destroyed. And again, Dibbo Gyan, Guru Mukha Padma Bhakha Chite, the first words in this song, which introduce the whole Prema Bhakti Chandrika. Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakati Sadma Bandha Moe Shavadhana. Then what is it? Guru, then he comes. Guru Mukha Padma Bhaka Chitete Korea Aika. The words from the mouth of the Guru, we have to make them one with our heart. So teaching, that emphasis is on teaching. Love, yes, bhakti is all about love, but the guru, the basis of the relationship is that the guru teaches and the disciple is there to learn. That is the point. And therefore the guru, he should be knowledgeable also. Should know what he has to teach. Of course, bhakti means love, but the guru has to teach. He has to teach Bhagavatam, in which it's stated, Tachtradhana Muneo, Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya, Pashantyatmichatmanam Bhaktya Shuta Grihitaya. Bhakti means love, but Bhagavatam says Bhakti Shuta Grihitaya. Bhakti is received by hearing, and particularly the word Shruta gives the sense of hearing the Vedic knowledge. Shruti. Tachtradhana Muneo, the faithful devotee, Prabhupada translates it, well equipped with jnana vairagya yuktaya, with knowledge and detachment, can see the soul of all souls by the process of bhakti, which is received by hearing. We have to hear and we have to learn. We have to distinguish between what do we have to learn? We have to learn what is sat, what is asat. We have at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita these important terms, sat, anasat, na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha, which in this context, as Krishna is speaking, directly refers to the body which is non-eternal and the soul which is eternal, but it has connotations beyond that. We have to distinguish between that which is material and that which is spiritual. That which is conducive for advancement in devotional service and that which is not. We have to surrender to Krishna. What does that mean, surrender to Krishna? It means anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Begins with that. Accepting what is favorable in Krishna's service and rejecting that which is not favorable. And how do we know? How will we distinguish? How do we distinguish between that which is even genuine devotional service, which is pleasing to Krishna, and doing everything according to the rule book, but still not pleasing to Krishna? It's quite possible. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warns, La puja pratishta di jata upashaka gon. In devotional service, we can be doing everything, all according to the rules, everything properly, but still not properly situated, if within our hearts there is the desire for monetary gain or material gain, if there is the desire for permission, position, recognition, prestige, and that these desires, if it's going on in our heart and we're performing bhakti, then automatically kutinati, this deceitfulness, will arise, and then our bhakti won't help us at all. So we have to learn all these things. How do we know? What is material desire and what is spiritual desire? Then we have to learn from the Guru and the Gurus. Atmendriya Priti Vancha Tare Bale Kam Krishnendriya Priti Icha Dhare Premanam. Whatever is done for our own personal satisfaction, that is called karma, personal desire, which is one of the three gates to hell. And practically it's the prime gate to hell. Actually, we have kam, krodh, lobh, underlying all three of these is kam, the desires for satisfying the senses. And then underlying everything, all of that, is envy of Krishna, from which comes, we have these six enemies. Matsarya is the last, enviousness to all others, which begins with enviousness of Krishna. And from that comes moha, illusion, by which we desire that which is not conducive to our actual benefit. And then that comes kama, and from that comes krodha, and from that comes lobh, and then from that comes mada, pride. So all these things are to be learned and understood. Otherwise we may have a feeling of love and think it to be bhakti, and we may be convinced that we're there, but it may be very shallow. In Bhagavad Gita also, tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshanaha. One has to approach those who have seen the truth. Here the term used is tattva darshi. The word tattva, this suggests knowledge, seeing the truth. Krishna doesn't say Krishna darshi, but he says tattva darshi. That means the understanding the principles. Why is it Krishna? Why is it Krishna? People, especially in India, they often are, why Krishna? Why not Shiva or Sai Baba or this, that, or the other? Why Krishna? So we have to understand from Shastra who is Krishna. Understand all this. Otherwise we may be attached to Krishna, but we'll have so many other attachments to various demigods and to various factors of sense gratification. So one has to approach a guru to learn all these things, to get the understanding of why we surrender to Krishna. So this initiation, today there's initiation ceremony, is scheduled to take place beginning just after this talk, or maybe this talk can be considered the beginning of it, or maybe we can consider the Mangalarti the beginning of it, or actually it begins, where does it begin? Where does the initiation begin? Well, it begins when we first contact devotees and we start to interact with them. We take a book of Srila Prabhupada's from them, or we take their invitation to come to the temple. It all begins there, but initiation is the formal consecration or of one's dedication to serve Krishna. In the beginning, people are coming and they're looking, they're seeing, they're hearing, they're liking. They come more, they come closer and closer and closer, and then they want to take initiation, which means a vow to make Krishna the goal of our life. Up to that point, it may be that Krishna is part of my life, but to take initiation means to make Krishna the goal of our life. In Hindi, we can say, do you want Krishna be or Krishna he? You can follow that as a Hindi speaker. Do we want Krishna also or just Krishna? So is it adding Krishna to, we say that, you just add Krishna to your life, but at some point we say, Savadhaman parityaja mam ekam sharanam raja, just surrender to Krishna fully. And that's meant for everyone who's taking initiation. It's not just for the brahmacharis. Now for the grihasthas, they have other things in their lives going on. But it's supposed to be that their family life is centered on Krishna also, and that they understand that my family situation is my present situation, but it's what I'm doing for my family and social and all this. Unless I'm able to very strongly dovetail that in Krishna's service, it's extraneous to my real activity of serving Krishna. If we're able to fully dovetail that in Krishna's service, then it becomes fully spiritual. It may be difficult if relatives are not very cooperative, or even then, if they are cooperative, we have to interact with the broader world in which people are not very Krishna conscious. And if we are very Krishna conscious, even in that situation, we can remain fully fixed on Krishna. But in family life, there are generally more social obligations than in non-family life. And these social obligations, they can be something to be endured until they're finished with, rather than more than something which we can very easily dovetail in Krishna's service. Anyway, the point is that initiation means dedicating our life to Krishna. There are various definitions of diksha. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find Lord Chaitanya saying, diksha kale bhakta kare atma samarpan. At the time of initiation, the disciple fully surrenders himself. A definition we have in Bhakti Shandharva of Srila Jiva Goswami, which Srila Prabhupada also quotes, divyam jnanam yato dadyat. The first symptom or characteristic of diksha is that process by which spiritual knowledge is given. Again, the emphasis is on knowledge. Divyam jnanam yato dadyat kuryat papasya sankshayam. The effect of which will be that sin is completely destroyed. Tasmad dikshati sa prokta deshikais tatvako vidai. People who know what they're talking about and who instruct in such matters, they call this process diksha, the process by which spiritual knowledge is imparted and sin is removed. So the gurus, they are gurus by loving, but primarily by giving knowledge. Giving initiation is a continuation or a solidification of the giving knowledge process. They give knowledge and they should, by practice and precept, be seen to be acting according to Shastra and according to the Parampara. In other words, they should speak what they have received in disciplic succession and they should act in that way also. Their actions and their teachings are seen to be in line with Guru, Sadhu, and the center of all is the Shastra. It's not some speculation or deviation. A Guru should come in a bona fide parampara, but it should be understood that he should also teach according and act according to the parampara teachings. You may have the best Guru, but that doesn't necessarily make you the best Guru. One has to follow strictly. Achinoti Yashastrani. Achinoti yashastrani shastratam stapyatyapi swayam acharate yasmad acharyastena kirtitaha. One is known as an acharya. Is one who knows the teachings of Shastra, teaches and establishes them by precept, by verbal teaching or by writing, and also acts in such a way so that it can be seen how the followers can see that this is what we have to do. We see that Gorkhi Shodas Babaji Maharaj, Uttamadhikari, acting on the platform of Uttamadhikari. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his only disciple, was also acting to a large extent on the platform of Uttamadhikari, sitting for years in a little hut in Mayapur, only chanting the holy names of Krishna, eating once a day, extremely austere, completely absorbed in the holy names. He also had some management affairs for the Yogapit. He had to oversee that also, but he was just sitting and chanting. Then he came out and he acted on the Madhyam platform and established mats. Gorkhi Shodas Babaji Maharaj, he only had one disciple, but then many people approached him to be his guru, but he wouldn't accept them. He said, if you can't be like him, he's not interested. But how do you go up to that level? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, coming to the Madhyam platform, taught, these are the things you have to do. And he made facility, and he preached. It just, Gorkhi Shodas Babaji, you come up to this level, but how, why? Gorkhi Shodas Babaji, as a Bhajanandi Vaishnava, was just interested in worshipping Krishna. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as an Uttamadhikari coming to the Madhyam platform, he acted on that platform to help others come up to that platform, which is the platform at which pure devotion begins. The Kanishtha Adhikari, he may have so many other extraneous interests in this world and may not be very convinced about Krishna consciousness at all. Jaha Komal Shraddha She Kanishtha Jan, one who has very pliant faith, not very strong faith, is a Kanishtha Adhikari. But a Madhyam Adhikari means he's convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the way the parampara is coming down at the present time. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made facility for people to come to Krishna consciousness and preach that people should take to Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada continued that, and he also set up centers of Krishna consciousness so that people can come and hear and participate in activities of Krishna consciousness. And it's still going on by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. The process of Krishna consciousness is still working. By his mercy, it's working. It's coming down in the parampara system. And the same current that Krishna hoite chatur mukha hoi Krishna shevan mukha, Brahma hoite narad aramati, narad hoite vyas, madhvakahe vyasadav, das. The same system. Krishna gave to Brahma, Brahma gave to Narada, Krishna gave to Brahma, Brahma gave to Narada, Narada gave to Vyas, Vyas gave to Madhva, and the same process is going on. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada wrote in his purport of the first canto, fourth chapter, text 33 of his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada wrote, Vidhi means Brahma, the first created living being. He is the original student as well as professor of the Vedas. He's the first student and the first professor within this material universe. He, Brahma, learned it from Sri Krishna and taught Narad first. So Narad is the second acharya in the line of spiritual disciplic succession. He is the representative of Brahma, and therefore he is respected exactly like Brahma, the father of all vidhis, regulations. Similarly, all other successive disciples in the chain are also equally respected as representatives of the original spiritual master. So why are the gurus respected? You may say, well, doesn't look to be such a great guru to me. You may think like that, but because he's representing the previous gurus and ultimately Krishna should be respected, just like Srila Prabhupada gave the example. During the time of the British rule in India, the Viceroy of India who was posted to India acted in the role of the king and was to be respected as good as the king, although he's known not actually royalty, but is respected as if royalty because appointed in that role as royalty and does all the ceremonial functions of royalty. Now it is a bit different because after all the kings, or during a lot of the time it was Queen Victoria, was just some lecher with some title queen stamped on them, but they certainly weren't givers of spirit. They weren't, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Naranam Chandaradhipam, among men I am the king. They weren't representing Krishna. They were a real king is a very much exalted person because they represent Krishna. They are to be worshipped. So in the same way, the guru is to be worshipped because he represents Krishna and represents all the great acharyas. Acharyang mam vijaniyan navamanyeta karhichit namartya buddhya suyeta sarva deva maya guru. Krishna tells Uddhava, in this context, Krishna was referring to the forest guru, the guru who lives in the forest with his wife and a few disciples, Gurukul Acharya. Krishna said that the Acharya should be respected as good as me. In fact, the exact translation, if we see, is that the Acharya should be known to be me. and not to be disrespected in any way, not thinking him an ordinary human being, because he is the embodiment of all the demigods, all the previous acharyas, and of God himself. And you may say, really? He gets up in the morning and passes his stool and looks like an ordinary, well, actually Krishna himself passes his stool also. But you may think he's just the acharya, just an ordinary person. But what distinguishes him such that he should be worshipped, in that Krishna says he should be worshipped? Because he gives spiritual knowledge and in this way represents all the previous acharyas, and in this way is to be worshipped. Now, we do see here in India there are certain what Srila Prabhupada would call so-called gurus. And they may speak Shastra. But they'll speak other things also. It's almost as if they have their own idea and they throw in a quote from some Upanishad or something to make it sound as if they actually know what they're talking about. Or it to sound as if they're somewhat spiritual. Or they take the dress of what people think should be a guru. Or they may come in some bona fide parampara, but they speak all different things. I spoke in the beginning of the talk about some guru down most downloaded in America or something like that. So they may speak some things according to Shastra and other things not. So where does that put them? I'll read a quote from Srila Prabhupada in this regard. Srila Prabhupada said, he was asked about so-called gurus, and Srila Prabhupada, so-called gurus? They are so-called gurus. They are not gurus. That is already explained. If one does not speak what Krishna speaks, he is not guru. If you accept so-called guru, that is your misfortune. What can be done? Then, Pushta Krishna Swami, who's interviewing Srila Prabhupada at this, he makes a very pertinent question. Some of them will say things that Krishna says, but they'll take from other places also. What is the position of such persons? Srila Prabhupada replied, he's most dangerous. He's most dangerous. He is an opportunist. He's finding out a customer, something here. According to the customer, he is giving something. As the customers will be pleased. So he is not guru. So someone comes, oh, you like to hear this? Okay, I'll speak that. You want to hear that? I'll speak that. You should speak something, Upanishad? Okay, a little something. Look up something. What's that? Kluplali? What? Okay, I'll have to learn that word, Upanishad. And they're making a show. They're not following any proper parampara. They're speaking according to the desire of the hearer in order to gain popularity. Srila Prabhupada said he's not a guru. They may have a semblance of being a guru. The minimum qualification of a guru is Krishna Tattva Veta. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says Jai Krishna Tattva Veta Shai Guru Hoy, it doesn't mean that he just knows it and he got a Bhakti Shastra degree, but it means he speaks it also and he doesn't speak anything else. Yeah, I got my Bhakti Shastra degree, and by the way, we should be compassionate and loving and kind and so many things with no reference to Krishna. And it sounds, right now. Yeah, it says that in Shastra, right? It says that, so you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says that, you know, devotees are compassionate. Yeah, so you tell everyone to be compassionate. But if you say it without reference to Krishna consciousness, then you can be compassionate like the Dalai Lama. He's very compassionate. He's always talking about compassion. He's compassionate almost all the day, except when he sits down to eat, and then he eats meat. So that's when it's just like people say, I'm a vegetarian almost all the day, except when I eat. Then I eat some meat. But the rest of the time, I don't eat meat, so I'm a vegetarian, right? Just a little bit non-vegetarian. So yeah, we're being very compassionate, except when we eat our food. And but they're speaking, they're also misleading people. You have so many people all over the world saying, yes, compassion, compassion, compassion. I'm very compassionate. But they're all eating meat because it's just mouthing it. It's called talking the talk, but not walking the walk. So whoever teaches, Srila Prabhupada said, whoever teaches how to know God and how to love Him, he is a spiritual master. But that also we understand, you don't mix it up. Mix it up, make your own brew. It is a new style. It may be packaged in different bottles. Srila Prabhupada wrote that about his own guru, old wine in new bottles. It's an English saying that the substance, the wine, yeah, it's an English saying. It's the wine is the same, but it's been you expect to get, okay, there's a bottle and the same shape bottle, and every time you go to the wine store to buy, it's in the same package, the same bottle for so many years. You just look and you see, okay, there's the bottle, and you just take it. But then you ask for this kind of wine, and then you go, that's not it. No, it is, but it's just in a different shaped bottle, that's all. So the packaging may change, but the substance has to be the same. Otherwise, you become what Srila Prabhupada also used the example, show bottle. Because in the wine stores, at least in the West, they have wine bottles in the window to entice people to come in and buy. And it looks like it's painted on the inside or something, so it looks like it's full of wine, but actually there's nothing in it. Why should they keep it in the bottle? So it's a show bottle. It looks like it's the real thing, but it's not. And usually, on the wine shops especially, they put bars on the window. In India, you do that in all shops, but probably in the West also now. But they put bars on the shops just in case people think there's real wine and they break the window to get it. But show bottle means it looks like the real thing, but there's no real substance there. So it is acceptable to give the real thing in a different package, but to give what looks like the real thing, but actually there's nothing there, there's a difference. And it does require some knowledge to be able to distinguish between who is real and who isn't. And it some good fortune, some sincerity is required also to understand all these things. Pursuant to this topic, which I'm just discussing, another quote from Srila Prabhupada. The definition of a genuine guru is that he is simply talking about God. That's all. If he's talking about some other nonsense, then he is not a guru. All we have to know is that the genuine guru is simply talking about God and trying to get people to become God's devotees. If he does this, he is genuine. So he should speak the right thing, and of course, he should also act in the right way, because if someone says something which is right but acts in a different way, he can't inspire confidence. You talk big, big things, and then you do something else. You don't live up to it. That won't inspire confidence. If one acts and speaks exactly in the same line, then apane achare keho na kore pracha, pracha kore keho na kore acha. Acha pracha name karaho duikaj tumi sarva guru tumi jagate arjo. This Sanatana Goswami said to Haridas Thakur that some people, they practice devotional service very well, but they don't preach. Others preach very well, but they don't follow properly. But one who does both, he is qualified to be the guru of all and is the best person in the world. So this fits very well with the Achinoti, Ashastrani, verse. Behaving properly in devotional service, preaching properly devotional service, it all depends. Acha and pracha depend on vicha, proper understanding. So that one can be a guru if one is properly understood from his guru. And what does the guru do? He gives knowledge, but it's not just a matter of learning Bhagavad Gita shlokas. We find many of our devotees, they like to train their children from a young age in learning Bhagavad Gita shlokas. Very good. Good. One time in Dallas, I believe it was, devotees, when Srila Prabhupada visited there, the devotees brought these Gurukul children, young children, and had them recite one verse by memory from Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada said, yeah, okay. Can they explain the verses also? That they couldn't do. So Srila Prabhupada said, you have to teach them not just the verses, you have to teach them the meaning of the verses also. So the giving knowledge, it means in all its subtleties, understanding what is the siddhanta, bhakti siddhanta, how is it properly understood. Otherwise, one may officially know, but one has to understand all the subtleties and be able to recognize the difference between actual pure devotion and a semblance of pure devotion. Otherwise, simply knowing without the sat siddhanta, the proper understanding, that might not help us very much. The guru is meant to give knowledge. He's most supposed to be knowledgeable. He should be knowledgeable to resolve doubts of the disciples. Knowledge is acquired by hearing, also by reading. That's also part of it. Swadhyaya is mentioned. Krishna recommends that in Bhagavad Gita as one of the elements of knowledge. And of course, Srila Prabhupada so much emphasized the reading of his books. So homework has to be done also. I see that several of my disciples are more learned than myself, maybe in some particular areas of Shastric knowledge, or overall more learned than myself. I may ask them questions or may ask them to research something from Shastra. Some of my disciples are more advanced in Krishna consciousness than myself. Some of them are at least materially more intelligent. Definitely some are better managers than myself. So that's good. That's good. The father likes to see the children do better than himself. But although I see and I'm happy that some of my disciples are going ahead of me, but I can't say the same in relation to Srila Prabhupada, myself and Srila Prabhupada. I can't say I'm more learned than Srila Prabhupada, more intelligent, better manager. I can't see myself better in any way. There's no doubt that Srila Prabhupada is a Mahabhagavato Mahan. This term is used in Srimad Bhagavatam to describe Prahlad Maharaj. Even among Mahabhagavatas, he is super. And of course, Srila Prabhupada very much embodied the spirit of Prahlad Maharaj in his compassion to deliver the conditioned souls. We may wonder then, why should my disciples bother with me if you can go ahead? I'm just somewhere, and Srila Prabhupada is so much ahead of us all. Then why am I? Srila Prabhupada's a guru. How can I be a guru? There's a whale and there's a minnow. Do you know what a minnow is? It's a tiny little fish about that size. It may refer to any tiny fish, and you find In India, people, some people, they catch them and eat. If you catch enough of them, you can eat enough. It's hardly enough. If you eat one, it's like equivalent to a few grains of rice. That's all. They're so small. So very tiny fish. And a whale can feed so many people. It's huge. So in this analogy, Srila Prabhupada is like a huge whale. Then we have Timingala, whale-eating fish. And then we have Matsya Avatar, who is so huge. But then the minnow is also a fish. Because it's not a fish. So one who gives knowledge in the proper way is also a guru. Can't say it's the same as Srila Prabhupada, but still performing the same function. The whale swims in the water. Actually, it's not, according to modern biology, it's a mammal. It's not counted as a fish, but according to Vedic taxonomy, it is Jalaja. We have Jalaja Navalakshani. There are 900,000 species of living beings within the water. That refers to those who move, because those who don't move, they're counted in a different category. That means seaweed and algae and things like that which grow in the water. So the basic function of a fish is fulfilled. Okay, let's say a shark, because a shark is counted as a big fish. The basic function which defines a fish swims, lives in the water, swims in the water. That's true of a shark, it's true of a tiny little fish, guppy. They have guppies, little fish, which people keep as pets. So they're all fish, but why they have the basic definition? So Srila Prabhupada is like Matsya Avatar, and we, his disciples, trying to follow in his footsteps, we may be like little fish smaller than your finger. But both are guru because both fulfill the function of giving knowledge. It's a rough analogy. You can't say that a tiny little fish is not a fish because it's not as big as a shark. But actually, if they give the knowledge faithfully, then the same result can be achieved. Otherwise, if the disciples, just like I say, some of my disciples are going ahead of me. Why is that? Is that because of me? No, because I'm acting as a, as much as one acts like a copper wire or a silver wire in channeling the current of electricity, then the electricity will come through. The current will not, it may decrease in a long chain. If you take wire electricity over many miles, then the voltage or the current may decrease. But in spiritual transmission, one receives the current and is also, but one is also directly attached to the powerhouse. So one can get the one by connecting with the immediate connection, then one also connects back to all the previous acharyas. That's why Krishna says Sarva Deva Mayo Guru. The guru is the representative of all the previous acharyas. So one connects with all the, if one's spiritual good fortune is such, or one's spiritual acumen is such, by taking the gift of Krishna consciousness from the guru, he's able to connect back. But he doesn't say, now you see, I've gone ahead. He never thinks like that. He may do, otherwise this parampara would always be in decline. But he can connect back. At the same time, his immediate connection is there. So he shouldn't think, I'm so great, I'm ahead of others, I don't need my guru, I'm more knowledgeable than my guru. Just like the son may go ahead of the father in so many ways, but he's always grateful to his father. So everyone should do. We just read yesterday from Hari Bhakti Vilas how the guru has some of his disciples initiate. Srila Prabhupada, from the very early time of his ministration in the Western world, said that some of you will be gurus in future. I'm teaching you now, you have to teach others in future. So it's just like giving birth. Give birth to a child, now it's a child and you treat as a child, but it's expected that the child will become in future a parent. It's the natural process. So that should go on. I don't know why some of my god brothers are reluctant to initiate. It's not me initiating. In one sense, yes, but we do it as a representative of the parampara. That's why this Ritvik thing is so hodgepodge. They say, well, we're not gurus, but we're just representing Srila Prabhupada. Well, any guru will say he's representing. That you, if you say, I am the guru, yeah, all right, but you're representing. They do everything. They give the beads, they give the name, they exercise authority over them. They do everything except take responsibility for their spiritual advancement. It's cheating process. And they interpret Srila Prabhupada also according to their own understanding. So it's bogus. The Ritvik thing is bogus. I intend to... Anyway, the point of this, or the guru, his basic function is to give knowledge, and initiation is part of that process by which the disciple can receive knowledge by formally committing. Then the channel becomes wide open. The channel by which knowledge can be transmitted and received. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nithaya churnakang padayane patya kritvacha kakushatam etad aham bravimi. Hey sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat goranga chandra charne kurutana raga. Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mukaro navayang vicharyama. Hari rasa madhiramadati. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna.